Welcome to the Lob Podcast, brought to you by Manscaped. Get 20% off Manscaped products when you use code TFT20.
Welcome to the Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lob Podcast with These Football Times. My name is Stuart Horsfield, and once again, we have arrived on one of those momentous occasions where we have another magazine podcast. And by now, hopefully on social media, you will have seen that it is not a club from the European Super League as we sit here and speak, which automatically guarantees that it will sell well and there will be public affection. And we are looking at Valencia. Now, the magazine is available to, as of recording, is going to be available to buy from May the 3rd. And this is going to come with the usual warning, caveat and klaxon that we will sell out and there will be people who will miss out and there will be people who will be really frustrated and end up having to look on eBay to complete the collection, which then segues me nicely into the fact that we are reissuing the Argentina magazine along with the Valencia magazine. More about that later on, but before we go any further, let me introduce the co-hosts and the knowledge behind this podcast. First of all, Mr. Gary Thacker. Gary, welcome.
Thank you, buddy, and it's nice to be talking about my local club. Valencia are about 90 metres away from where I live, over here in Spain, and we live in the Valenciana region, so it's my local boy, so yeah, it's about time we got to a local club for me.
It's taken a while, but we got there eventually.
We got there at the end, yeah, and it just wasn't for this perishing, blooming pandemic. I mean, I might even have got to be able to have a visit to the club and all that sort of thing, but of course...
Soon.
That's, yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, you know, just let's get this pandemic out of the way and we can get back to proper football. Then there's this Europa Super League nonsense has been sidelined and put back in the bin where it deserves. Let's get back to talking about proper football.
It is, and to be fair though, if we've got Valencia fans listening, which I hope we do, you might have to do like a signing event, Gary, if you go. You could take some copies of the magazine and sign your article.
Works for me, kiddo. Works for me. My fees are extremely reasonable.
just a beer. Second of all, we have Mr. Stephen Scragg. Stephen, welcome.
Oh, looking forward to this. What a club. What a club. I doubt there's anyone who's got an ill feeling towards this club at all. You know, usually there's very few clubs that don't rub up someone the wrong way. And, you know, Valencia ticked this box. Massive respect, some great eras, some wonderful players, iconic kits, you know, just... For me, you know, harking back, you know, I'll always throw it in if possible, but the sports night era, and this is where Mario Kempes was. You know, one of my earliest memories was them playing West Brom. You know, an incredible end-to-end game. You know, that Ron Atkinson's West Brom side, and Valencia have just been an omnipresent figure, really. You know, the 80 Cup Winners' Cup final, but not the greatest of games, but, you know, the awe of the penalty shootout and, you know, Arsenal losing out. No ill feeling towards Arsenal whatsoever, but, you know, here's this team called Valencia with you know, the wonderful Mario Kempes, and, you know, they've always kind of stuck in the consciousness. You know, they've always been there or thereabouts.
That's all right. And the most exciting thing is making his debut on the Lob Podcast, Mr. Josh Butler. Josh, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me, guys. I'm extremely excited. I've never been on before, have I? This is my debut.
Are you excited?
I am extremely excited. I'm excited. I can't express how excited I am.
Oh, that's good. That's excellent. So obviously, guys, you've all written articles for the magazine, as I have as well. So I'm going to go through the articles first in total. So hopefully it will, like I say, people who are listening, Valencia fans, maybe non-Valencia fans, like Stephen's mentioned, this is a club, I suppose, a little bit like Ajax, maybe, that they don't tend to offend and everybody is interested in. So to begin with, front cover, done by Mr. Phil Galloway. Then we move on to Mundo by Paul McParlan. We talked about Mario Kempes, which is done by my good self. The Rise from 1986 is by you, Steve. Then we have Mendieta by Will Sharp, Jose Canizares from Chris Weir, Claudio Lopez from James Sweeney, Hector Cooper, Luke Osman. The Rafa Era has been done by one of our other regular co-hosts, Mr. Aidan Williams, arguably a little bit more successful than his club, but he won't be listening, so it's fine. Baraja by James Kelly, Pablo Aymar by you, Gary, Via Matter and Silva from Billy Monday, Jose Gaia interview with Josh, which we'll be getting into a little bit more with you, Josh, and Parejo from Ewan McTeer. So plenty to get our teeth into today. Plenty, obviously, for people who are looking to buy the magazine. Obviously, this is accompanied by artwork and incredible photographs. And as hopefully everybody who's already got a copy of the magazine will know, it is accompanied by that incredible smell that only a These Football Times magazine can generate. And it probably accounts for half of the fee, if I'm honest. The words and the images are worth about a fiver. And the smell is probably worth about the other fiver.
I have images of Oompa Loompas with spraying them before they go in the boxes and stuff like that. You know, so a little bit of kind of like you know, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
It is, and it's like KFC. The recipe is a secret. There are 12 different scents that go into the magazine. The magazine.
You know, Stu, I used to work with a guy whose company produces, who actually does the printing of these mags. So I do know the secret, but I've been sworn secret.
Gary,
he would have to kill us if he told.
Really?
I would be killed. So you know, I mean, yeah, I think go down the line.
Oh, is it written down or is it just locked away in the memory?
It's in a safe.
Excellent.
In a cave, in a mountain, in a forest.
Protected by lions.
In an island. Protected by dragons.
Brilliant.
And it's all owned by Omar.
Fair enough. I think we're bringing out an aftershave, if I'm honest, just at the Christmas time.
That's not for Josh. Is he something he's got a beard? That's not to him.
Yeah, get a nice beard oil.
Anyway, enough of the smell, which say does account for arguably, like I say, half the reason why people buy it. So we're obviously, guys, first of all, Valencia is a club, you know, in all seriousness. We've worked with some of the big clubs in Spain, obviously Real Madrid and Barcelona. We've done big clubs in South America, other big clubs in Europe, big clubs in England. And then we've started to look at not smaller clubs, not by that respect, but certainly, I guess now is a topical time, but what would be classed as European Super League worthy clubs, shall we say. You know, we're now looking at a club like Stephen said at the beginning, that is very inoffensive and sort of conjures up memories of not of a bygone era, but certainly when football and certainly European football came into our collective conscience. Josh, how old are you, by the way, just before we carry on with this?
I'm 30.
Okay, brilliant. That'll do. That's all right.
Child.
So, like I say, we'll start with your thoughts and feelings on Valencia as a club, guys. So, you know, I'll come to you first, Gary. Like you say, relatively local to you. You know, Valencia, great club for us to do. As we see on there, the list, great stories, great players, great tradition, wonderful ground, and a great club for us to do.
Yeah, Valencia, as I said, are a sort of, you know, my local top league club. And they're one of the iconic clubs in La Liga. I mean, you know, obviously people always talk about Barcelona and Real Madrid and perhaps Atleti as well. But, you know, beyond that, along perhaps with Sevilla and Athletic Club up in Bilbao, Valencia are in that next sort of tier. And they have this sort of reputation of having bursts of success and then sort of falling away. And, you know, obviously a lot of the players we're going to talk about have been sort of celebrating those bursts of success. And where I live, there's a lot of bars that show the La Liga games, and there's two clubs that sort of, I wouldn't say sell the place, but you know when the games of these two clubs on the TV on the big screen, the bars, and that's one is Real Madrid, obviously, my popular club is Spain, but certainly here, the other one is Valencia. And there's a lot of Valencia fans here around the area where I live, and you know, they're one of the, I'd say they're one of the iconic clubs of Spain that sort of are liked because they're not a dominant club, although they do have periods where they succeed. But they're one of these clubs, and Stephen mentioned this earlier, you sort of alluded to it as well, that they're fairly, they're not disliked by anybody. There are a couple of local rivals. Villarreal is based in Valencia, and Levante is just outside Valencia. So they've got a couple of local rivals, but they are the prime club in Valencia. And certainly in this area of Spain, sort of southeast of Spain, is where I am. You know, they're the probably outside of Real Madrid, they're the most sort of respected club.
Sorry, guys. Sorry, Josh. Obviously, you know, we've done, like we say, we've covered quite a few clubs in Europe now. Anderlecht was our previous magazine. And again, I suppose Valencia are a comparable club in terms of, you know, they've had past European glories. You know, they're very much at the heart of European competition. Maybe, you know, at the moment, not on a downturn as such, but as we're seeing with football across all leagues, certainly in European football, there's starting to be this separation between the very top teams in the league and then the next sort of tier of clubs, if you like, that sit within La Liga. And I guess, you know, Valencia would be classed as one of those clubs.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I was growing up, so that would have been at the end of the 90s and the start of the noughties, like, Valencia seemed like Spain's third biggest club behind Real Madrid and Barcelona to me, because, I mean, I can remember them being in two Champions League finals, I think. And I think they won the league twice in that era as well. So, I mean, like, for a kid like me, when I was just obsessed with watching as much football as possible and playing Pro Evo and Football Manager and things, it almost seemed like Valencia were a bit of a cult club, that if you didn't want to go for one of the big boys in terms of Barcelona or Real Madrid, the third biggest one and the one that actually had a lot of prestige without being one of the bully boys was Valencia. So I've always had a bit of a soft spot for them, because I feel like they've got enough prestige to be considered one of Spain's biggest clubs, but they don't quite have some of the vitriol attached to them that Real Madrid or Barca do, in the fact that they're so huge and all-conquering that people dislike them for that reason. I think Valencia are, like the other guys have said, relatively inoffensive.
It does seem to be, like you say, it does seem to be a common thread, Josh, in terms of that sort of supporters from, I guess Gary will know probably better than us, but certainly supporters from other clubs in Spain, and even us from, across the channel, if you like, and other European fans have a soft spot for them. And obviously, you know, Stephen, will come to your article in a second and the time span that covers. But, you know, as we've sort of alluded to already in the list of articles and the number of players, this is a club that have produced some iconic players for Spain, but it's also managed to attract players from outside of Spain, arguably from South America, to come and play for them. And that takes a certain amount of pull or kudos in order to attract players of that calibre.
Totally. I mean, they're bad. You know, I think having a player like Mario Kempes under your umbrella is a huge thing in South America. You know, there's not many more iconic Argentinian players. Obviously, there's the omnipresent, you know, Diego Maradona. But, you know, beyond that, you know, there's not many, certainly goal scorers, out-and-out goal scorers, you would say, have such a, I don't know, such a hold and such a respect as Kempes does. You know, he his exploits in the 78 World Cup just kind of like set him up for life, you know, and for Valencia to have acquired his services, you know, cleverly almost, you know, it's going to annoy me that now. But anyway, they got hold of him, and then, you know, so this is just kind of like, well, Kempes went, so, you know, this is a place that we should be attaining to go to. You know, and then they've had a habit of attracting kind of like, you know, wonderful names, you know, and then producing wonderful players as well. You know, so they've run absolute, you know, across the board. And the fact that what they tend to do is they tend to ebb and flow as a club. You know, they have some great teams, and then they'll have a downtime for like a decade or so, and then they'll come back again. And the repeat successes is what they are. They come back and they come and they go. And like the early 70s, they were very, very dominant in the early 70s, won the title under Di Stefano. You know, people don't really associate Di Stefano as the coach. You know, it's his playing days that just, you know, overshadow absolutely everything else to do with him. But, you know, as a coach, he was a coach of substance. You know, and more so at Valencia than he was at Real Madrid. You know, he was a three times hero as a coach with Valencia. You know, to the first time around, late 60s into the early 70s, to win the La Liga title for them, 71. Which would be the last one until Benitez won it for them in 2002. 31-year gap, lost an amazing, what was at the time the Copa Generalissimo, Cup final in 71 against Fit Buckingham's Barcelona, ended 4-3. Valencia had edged them out in the title race, and Barcelona kind of like got a bit of redemption in the cup final. And then to come back again, win the Cup Winners' Cup for them in 1980, and then come again and drags them out of the Segunda after relegation in 86. You know, he's probably Valencia's most important coach. You know, there's an argument to be made to say he was, just because of what he did for them on so many different levels. But yeah, you know, wonderful, wonderful club that are just so attractive, I think. You know, like Josh said, when we say they're inoffensive, that almost sounds an awful kind of platitude to give a club, but it's meant in the best possible way. You know, the fact that they aren't Real Madrid and they aren't Barcelona, who understandably alienate as much as they enthrall. You know, across the globe. You know, Valencia are just a team that I think is just so, a club that are so well respected in so many quarters. And yes, they'll have the local difficulties. You know, everyone dislikes one of your local neighbours. But, you know, they are arguably one of the most respected Spanish clubs, I think. You know, when you think of the balance of that, you know, the respect to kind of like the hate or the, you know, the dislike for a club, I think it all tends to be shifted towards whatever people feel about Valencia. It tends to be positive.
And just to add something in here, Stu, just very briefly.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with what Stevie says, but... much of the listeners will know this, but Valencia are the only club ever to be sued by Batman. I mean, it's true. Well, it's a little bit true. The club, I mean, Valencia fans listening will know, but perhaps others won't, that the nickname is Los Murcielagos, which means the bats. And their crest is a picture of a bat. And about 5-6 years ago, DC Comics took Valencia to court for using their registered trademark, which obviously the Batman, the sort of symbol of the bat. I believe they lost because Valencia could prove that they actually existed long before DC Comics had invented the idea of Batman. But, you know, so Valencia are the only football club in the world ever to be sued by Batman.
Well, yeah. If ever there was a reason to do a magazine, that was it right there. Stephen's opening monologue was brilliant, but Gary, that was even better.
I'm not to mention it. It's straight out of my brain as I was talking. I mean, as things tend to do when I ramble on.
That's okay. So we'll get into the articles, and obviously I'm not starting with mine because I'm the one asking the questions. That's not it. But if we look in sort of chronological order, you know, we've all sort of had a little mention of Mario Kempes. And his sort of influence, I guess, and his arrival. And Josh, I'm fully aware that you're the youngest here by quite a bit, so I will be careful what I ask and what we expect of you. But so I'm going to give you first shout at Mario Kempes. But in terms of Mario Kempes, your thoughts, opinions, I'm guessing, you know, there are certain players, I suppose it doesn't really matter of your age, that people are aware of. And again, Mario Kempes, as Stephen said, is probably one of those players that every football fan will have either a memory of or will be aware of.
Yeah, I suppose, because I've always enjoyed Argentinian football anyway, because I think, as you probably know, one of my heroes is Gabriel Batistuta, because I, probably for another podcast, but I argue long and hard that he's the greatest number nine of all time.
I actually agree with you on that.
Oh, thank you. You need to tell Andy Flint, because he refuses to accept it.
I absolutely agree with you.
But yeah, I suppose growing up absolutely adoring Batistuta also meant that diving into Argentinian football, I became aware of Mario Kempes, because he was sort of like, I guess, regarded as, if Batistuta was the greatest Argentinian striker, then he was probably arguably the second greatest. So I only really knew of Kempes because of Argentina at the World Cup. I never really was aware of him at Valencia because it was a former time, but I just knew that he was about as clinical as finisher as they come.
I'll come to you, Gary. You know, Kempes was the last player to sort of get out of Argentina before Menotti put the entire Argentine playing squad of the entire league in lockdown and prevented any more players from moving out of Argentina leading up to the 78 World Cup. And Kempes was the last player essentially to get out and went to Europe. Menotti had made big claims, big sweeping statements that he wouldn't use any players that played abroad, that played outside of Argentina, and yet he couldn't resist using Kempes, and obviously he was proved to be absolutely right.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have to say, in 1978, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Kempes was a devil incarnate for scoring those goals against the Dutch in the World Cup final. But we'll gloss over that. I had a friend who was a West Bromwich Albion supporter, and I'm not sure the exact year, but it was obviously around the sort of late 70s when the Baggies played Valencia in a probably UEFA Cup game. And it was a time when Kempes and Rainer Bonhoff playing for Valencia. And, you know, this Kempes, I mean, you know, had this aura about him. You know, there's some players that they just look like they're not like ordinary players. They're from another planet. They do things that ordinary players, us mortals, can't do. And Kempes had that aura about him. I think he scored both goals. Valencia won 2-1. I think he scored both goals. Simply scored one. And a really outstanding striker of his era, of that sort of Argentine era. You know, when they won the World Cup, that was at his peak of his powers. And you know, he had so much about him. He had a bit of pace. He's good in the air. He was strong. He was big. He scored all types of goals as well. You know, some players, you know, they get tap-ins or they just score most of the goals with their head or whatever. Every type of goal. An outstanding striker for me is definitely one of the best of this era.
It's funny. We'll get Stephen's opinion on him in a second. I would imagine it'd be very similar to mine. But when I was researching the article, and you know, like you do, any excuse to watch YouTube videos of football or whatever it is, and to me, and this comes across in the article, he played like, you know, when you have a school team and the best player usually plays up front, but will probably go all the way back into defence to go get the ball himself, and then arguably run the length of the field and just seems to do everything himself. And the amount of goals, like you said, Gary, you know, he did score all types of goals, but the amount of goals where he would probably have received the ball somewhere just inside the attack in half, and he would just travel with it and score. And he had that physique, that power, that look, that he was just superior to everybody else on the pitch. That he could just go and get the ball whenever he wanted, and then go and score, just like the kid in the school team. And that, you know, at the highest level, you know, we're talking golden boots of World Cups. You know, it's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing to achieve, to be by that far the best player on the pitch. And obviously for you and I, Stephen, you know, and again, some of that I put in the article, he's the first foreign player, or certainly name, that I was really aware of. Certainly the look sort of set me up for life as to how players from South America would look. He had it all. And he just became the archetypal South American footballer. He just had that look that I still look for. In I expect all my South American footballers to look
like Mario
Kempes.
Yeah, completely. I think, I mean, I have a vague recollection of kind of like one of the first copies of Shoots that I ever fell into possession of. And it would have been not bought by me, it would have been handed to me by like an older family member of some description, an older cousin or something like that. And it was Kempes on the cover in his Valencia shirt. And it would have been around the time they were playing West Brom. That's why I've got this fixation, you know, in my mind of kind of like that West Brom game and Kempes in particular. And yeah, he was just utterly bludgeoning, you know, almost in a way like a prototype Diego Costa almost, you know, because he just had that utter sense of determination to put the ball in the back of the net, and he'd do it any which way he needed to. You know, if he could make it aesthetically pleasing, he would, but it didn't have to be. That was it. It was first and foremost about getting the ball in the back of the net. And you know, it was an added bonus if there could be, you know, a skillful flourish to it. And it was just that utter sensitivity. And the fact that he kind of like stuck it out with Valencia as well. I mean, that sounds like he was part of a really poor side, but you know, that's not meant like that. You know, he was a player that was custom built for like Serie A. You know, he was custom built for being picked off by Real Madrid or Barcelona. Yet he remained, you know, he remained loyal to Valencia to the point that, you know, even when he went back to Argentina, he was back at Valencia within a year. You know, that was the thing, that affinity he had for the club was just utterly epic. You know, he was Valencia. You know, it took a long time for my first, I mean, even now, you know, you say Valencia, I automatically think Mario Kempes. And but, you know, other things have happened since then that, you know, complement Kempes. So, you know, there's a whole array of things that make Valencia such an iconic football club. But, you know, Kempes, you know, was the scene setter for me and Yusuf.
Yeah, he absolutely was. It's funny, just as I was finishing the article, I found there'd been a vote for Valencia's greatest ever player. And I'll get your opinion on this in a sec, Josh, because you'll be able to relate to this better than us. And Mario Kempes was eventually voted Valencia's greatest ever player by 52% to 48%. And the other person who was in consideration for the final was David Villa. But that's the esteem that the Valencia fans hold Mario Kempes in, as, you know, he is their greatest ever player. But, you know, just for you, Josh, you know, there is an article that includes David Villa that Billy's done, along with Mata and Silva. But in terms of David Villa, probably more your generation than Mario Kempes. Obviously, you know, I'm not asking you to compare the two, but I am going to ask you to compare the two. Do you think it was a fair result to have Mario Kempes over David Villa?
I mean, David Villa feels like at times like he's a bit of an underrated centre forward. Like the amount of goals he scored for Valencia, but also for Barcelona, and then I think he ended up at Atletico Madrid. Mm. He just scored goals wherever he went at the very highest level, like including internationally for Spain. And he seems to seldom get mentioned in conversations for who is the greatest striker of his era. But then I know that Mario Kempes is held in such high regard that I guess if David Villa was going to come second to anyone, him. I mean, when I think of Valencia, the one player I think of is Gaizka Mendieta. Like, that was the one when I was growing up, where with his little wiry frame and his oversized shirt and hair buffeted by the wind, like that was Valencia in my mind's eye.
It's a great shout, actually, to be fair. And Will's done an article on Mendieta. But yeah, I guess from those sort of early Champions League campaigns that you'll have witnessed as a child, you know, that name does crop up a bit like Mario Kempes did for Stephen and I. Obviously, we'll come to your article next. We'll sort of go through this, I guess, chronologically. And, you know, you kind of took us up to, I guess, around about 1986 when you were chatting about Valencia as a club. But your article is entitled The Rise from 1986. But I guess, as we were saying before we came on air, you sort of covered the rise and then a bit more and then a bit more after that. And then you just threw in a bit more at the end of that as well.
Yeah, I think in the end it stretched to about 6,000 words or so. Omar kind of emailed, so it's run to about 16 pages. And, you know, all in all, and I was like, sorry, boss.
Sorry, not sorry.
I'll try and keep a lid on the next one. And it was because it was one of those where it was designed to be Valencia in the 90s, and, you know, this decade of kind of like underachievement almost, but regeneration as well, because they'd had so many bright points of this run throughout the 90s. You know, so much promise for a while under Gus Hiddink, you know, that was unfulfilled. And then eventually it culminates with Ranieri's, you know, rise with them and winning the Copa del Rey before handing over to Cooper. So, you know, I took it up to that cup final, 99 cup final. But then when you're starting it at kind of like the beginning of the 90s, you do backtrack a little bit over the seasons that lead up to that. You're thinking, well, that relegation was in 86. So you've got to kind of factor that in. You've got to, you know, factor in the lowest low to Ranieri handing over to this wonderful few years under Cooper and then Benitez. And then you look at the relegation, you can't just say, well, they were relegated in 86. Then you start to think, well, you have to kind of like flesh that out a little bit by saying, well, how did it even come to that? How does a club the size of Valencia end up being relegated in 86? You know, just 6 years on from winning the Cup Winners' Cup, you know, massive club of substance. So in the end, it ended up being, you know, this odyssey of an article that covered the vast majority of the 1980s and virtually, you know, I don't know, all but 6 months of the 1990s. And it was just the more you dug, and you know, I knew bits and pieces. You know, my dad invested in a cable box in the early 1990s. He was one of the trendsetters. Unusually, he was one of the trendsetters. Not in many other ways and means, but he did. He invested. And I always remember Screen Sports used to show like a load of the Spanish goals. And you'd also get kind of like Football Focus and Saints and Greavesy on a Saturday afternoon because of so many British players being involved in Spanish football. They'd always show the goals that Lineker scored for Barcelona and you know, bits of pieces. So I was kind of centric to Spanish football from about the mid-80s. As soon as Lineker became a Barcelona player, you got to see you know, regular Spanish goals here and there. And just knew that Valencia were you know such a... And because of Kempes as well. So it jarred because I didn't even know about this relegation for a long time. It was kind of like it hopped from Kempes to this you know one of the next best sides being Valencia behind Real Madrid and Barcelona. And then I was writing, so I think it must have only been kind of like 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago that when you come to backtrack and look at the seasons, you had this relegation and it just stood out like a sore thumb. So yeah, when you come to look at that, then I had to kind of like piece it all together for the article then. And you know, then you're doing that and it's kind of like, well, there's the Di Stefano factor as well because he'd come back. And so you had to once you start to factor Di Stefano into an article that's basically covering kind of like two decades, you're really kind of like hitting kind of like marathon. You're going for a full-on marathon here. And it was a joy to do, and it was these fluctuations that they had that were just so amazing. And the starting thing is like the players that they kind of let go, you know, they brought in and let go of Leandro for one. You know, it was amazing to piece together these players that had come not fulfilled and then were shipped out only to go massive somewhere else. There was this utter sense of brilliant promise, yet kind of like shooting themselves in the foot. And then, because in the end, when it came together with Ranieri, it was almost out of the blue because, you know, they'd had all these years of kind of like, you know, self-destructing, showing so much promise and then self-destructing. It was just this pattern that you think they can't possibly get out of. Yet they did, you know, and Ranieri was the one that broke the spell. You know, not Hiddink, but Ranieri. I mean, part of that run as well was that the fact that, you know, Hiddink was sacked. They had two successors that were brought in and did so badly that by the time they'd sacked the second one, they brought Hiddink back to finish the season off because he was still under contract. And then after finishing the season really well, you know, they didn't renew his contract. They brought in Carlos Alberto Pereira because he'd won the World Cup. You know, he'd managed very, very minimally in club football in Brazil, let alone anywhere else. So no European experience whatsoever. So it was just brilliant. In the end, it was one of these articles, a bit like, you know, who do you think you are? It's the Valencia magazine's version of who do you think you are?
Okay. So from that then, Josh, I guess, sometimes when we look at these magazines and, you know, people might think, well, you know, why have you picked this club? There's bigger clubs, if you like, that we've still not covered. But, you know, when you get articles like Stephen or little mini books like Stephen appears to have written for this one, it's like, you know, these are the reasons why we do these sorts of clubs. It's why, you know, it's why we did Anderlecht. It's why we're doing Valencia, that, you know, the stories that exist are maybe not quite so well-known stories, but arguably more fascinating than some of the big clubs whose stories are so well-known and have been told so many times that, you know, this is why we do these magazines and this is why we do these types of clubs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's probably the crux of it, in that Valencia has got such a rich history, but certainly one that's not been told as often as Real Madrid or Barcelona. I mean, like being a United fan, I'd love to do a United magazine, but I mean, everyone knows every story inside out from United, so it wouldn't necessarily be particularly radical. Whereas Valencia, I mean, like even me, who, you know, I've watched a lot of football and have done since I was a kid, there is the things that Stephen was talking about there, and I was like, I've never heard of half of this in my life. Like, so that would be the first thing I would read. And I think that's why some of the I hesitate to say smaller teams, because I mean, Valencia aren't necessarily a small team, but maybe the less recognised teams, like when we did Anderlecht, for example. And I mean, even to a certain extent when we did River Plate, because I mean, like outside of Europe, I mean, they're probably not as well known to Europeans as they are to South Americans. It's all these stories that feel like they haven't yet been told to a wider audience. I mean, that's a lot of the appeal, in that, you know, there's massive facets of Valencia I've never even explored. So, I mean, there's so much Wales history. I think it's amazing and fantastic.
Agreed. I mean, are you a keen student of the history of the game?
Yeah, I do. I enjoy. I mean, most of it came, like, I think probably with most people, in that my dad brought me up a Man United fan. So all I wanted to do when I was younger was learn about Manchester United from the Busby Babes all the way through, you know, George Best. I mean, if you ask my dad who the greatest footballer of all time is, he'll say George Best, and he will not shit in that. So, I mean, I've always enjoyed learning about clubs and where they came from and what made them what they are today. And I suppose these Football Times always seems to do that really well. Like, even when I was reading the River Plate magazine, I was like, because I did the Academy story about how River Plate formed their academy. And I was like, they were 50 years ahead of their time, but I'd never heard this before. So, I mean, there's so much to delve into in the history of these clubs, whether or not you regard them as being like powerhouses or, you know, like prestigious ones. It's irrelevant, really.
Exactly. And you're right. It, you know, it absolutely is the story. You know, it's the stories behind the club. And Gary, you know, the last sort of thing, I guess, on Stevens is, you know, sort of certainly younger people, I'm not including Josh in this, I don't want that to sound patronising at all, but, it, you know, younger fans, you know, who are currently looking at the Champions League or look at La Liga, and it's almost sort of incomprehensible that Valencia were relegated so relatively recently. But you only have to look at the likes of Manchester City, who were playing in the third tier of English football relatively recently. You know, and you know, football is so 24/7 in your face, but it's 24/7 in your face now. It's not 24/7 the history and the past. It, you know, everything that is in your face is immediate and now. And so some, you know, younger people, it's not their fault, nothing wrong with that, but maybe not quite so aware of the stories, that the trials and tribulations that it's taken, and certainly for Valencia, certainly, you know, even like, say, Manchester City, you know, what it takes to get where they are now. You know, they've gone through some real trauma to get there.
Yeah, you're right. And actually, I mean, at the moment, Valencia are in a bit of a downswing at the moment. I mentioned the other clubs in Valencia, Grisel, Villarreal and Levante. And I'm pretty certain without checking that both Villarreal and Levante are probably above Valencia in the league. And they had a substantial financial meltdown over the summer and sold off a few players, including the guy that Ewan spoke about, Dani Parejo, who was the emotional leader of the club. And they sold him to Villarreal, which went down like a lead balloon with all the fans at the Mestalla. You're right, and history of a club dictates a lot of what they are, although it's not always recognised to be the case, in as much as, you know, I'm always a bit wary when people say, oh, you know, it's been the best all-time player from this club. Well, in that sort of situation, you've got to exclude the first 10 years, the most recent 10 years, because people don't know who the guys are 50, 60 years ago. And, you know, Valencia had a lot of... I mean, we, you know, Stevie mentioned about the 70s and, you know, going up from the 80s to the 90s. I mean, even the 90s, we're talking 30-odd years ago. That's an awful long time for, you know, some fans in their 20s who have no experience of that sort of thing at all. I mean, in their 20s, I mean, they probably haven't got a football consciousness until the last 15 years or so. So, yeah, I mean, there's a rich history, there's a rich heritage, there's a rich tradition about clubs like Valencia. And, you know, to fully appreciate why they are considered one of the iconic clubs in Spain is, you know, you need to understand what they've achieved in the past.
Absolutely. And I guess sort of leaving that to one side for now, but certainly a lot of the stories in the magazine are going to cross over. You know, we try and do these chronologically, but we sort of, you know, skip to and fro based on certain players or if people have written about certain eras or combinations of players. But, you know, like we said at the beginning, Gary, we're re-releasing the Argentina magazine, which is a bit like the chocolate factory analogy, it's a bit like the golden ticket of these Football Times magazines, you know, selling for hundreds of pounds on eBay. And then all of a sudden, you know, Omar's decided to re-release Argentina. And like we said at the beginning, I think eBay are now having a little shareholders meeting and a little bit panicky about what's going to happen with their end of year profits based on the fact that we're re-releasing Argentina. But
it's far bigger than the Super League story. It's far bigger.
And to be fair, I did see Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher commenting on it actually this afternoon about the release of the Argentina magazine.
It'll cheer Gary Neville up no end.
And to tie in with that, Gary, obviously, you know, I've written about Mario Kempes, you've written about Pablo Aimar, and, you know, it's almost a little bit of a bit symbiotic that the Argentina magazine comes out alongside the Valencia magazine because of that. I'm sure Omar planned it like that, because of that Argentine influence. But like I say, you know, your magazine, the sort of player you admire and respect?
I'm a midfielder, defensive sort of player, admirer, shall we say. Aymar was one of these players that I'll sort of mention the sort of critique that gives him value, that gives him unarguable status a little bit later. But we're talking about a guy here, this guy who started off in Argentina, played in a small place called Real Cuarto, which was actually famous for exporting goods around the world. I mean, and Aymar turned out to be one of those very particular goods exported around the world. And he was actually signed by Boca. And his father didn't want him to go to play football. He wanted to be a doctor, you know, as very paternal instincts. And he was only convinced to let him sign for Boca by a visit from Passarella, who went to persuade the guy to let his son sign for Boca. And this guy, I mean, Aymar made his debut. This is for Boca Juniors. This isn't for, you know, a mediocre side. This is one of the top sides in the country at the time, at the age of 16. And he was playing alongside the likes of Marcelo Salas, Juan Pablo Mangel, and this guy, I don't know if you've heard of him, Stu, called Francis Goli or something like that.
I've heard of him, Gary.
Yeah, have you heard of him? Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, he wasn't playing with ordinary players. I mean, that's how he played at the age of 16 and had a lot of success there. And then he was signed by Valencia for a world record fee at the time. And this was when Cooper was there, and they just lost the European Cup final. And Aymar played in the second run of the final where they lost again to Bale. I mean, how tragic is that, losing two European Cup finals in 2 years? Must have been sort of decimated. But Aymar then he flourished under Benitez very much with their play. He played alongside Alvaldo and Baraka, and that midfield was built to allow the talent of Aymar to flourish. And he became a real hero for the fans on the Mestalla. And a bit like, you know, you mentioned about Kempes earlier, that's always Stevie said that he always considered as part of Valencia, and he went back afterwards. And I got a quote in the article from Aymar, and he said, "I had a beautiful time in Valencia. Two of my children are Valencian. I have a special affection for the city, and hope they reach the top again. I had some great moments, another not so much, but surely it be returned to the club will always return to the position it deserves." And there's that sort of kinship for the club that he felt when he was there. And just to give you, I think Aymar was an exceptional player, but I'm going to give you two references for people who are perhaps a little bit more qualified than I am. And
I don't think there will be, Gary.
I don't think there will be either, but I've just got to say that, haven't I?
Oh, well, yeah, I suppose.
Modesty. Well, one was Leo Messi.
No.
No. And he described Aymar as his idol. And the other one was Diego Maradona, who actually said, "Pablo is the only player I'd pay to watch." Now, I mean, I ain't going to argue with Messi. I definitely ain't going to argue with Diego Maradona. But this was a guy who, and he didn't score a tremendous amount of goals, but he was the sort of player that got fans on the edge of the seats. He was an entertainer. He did breathtaking stuff, and created far more goals than he scored. And he was a key element of the success that Valencia had under Benitez. And strange enough, after he left Valencia, he went first to Zaragoza and on to Benfica, and he never had that same success, he never had that same aura about him as he did with Valencia. Sometimes players fit like a hand in a glove with the club, and Aymar and Valencia were very much that.
It's a great point, and like I say, to me, he's one of those players that I just love watching, that, you know, that sort of player. You know, for you, I've got a couple of questions for you, Josh, but, you know, the first one, you know, you're sort of, you know, I'm out, you know, what are the type of players that you are? Obviously, you talked about Batistuta at the beginning, you know, but you're, you know, who are the type of players that you would pay to watch?
From any club ever?
As Gary's mentioned there, you know, when you've got a reference like Maradona on your CV saying that you're the only player that he would pay to watch, it makes you a special player. But, you know, everybody has their favourite sort of type of players, or their favourite type of players who they could name that they would go and pay to watch.
Yeah, I think the whole thing about Aymar as well is that it feels like, even though Maradona said that, but I think it was like early 2000s he said that, it feels like Aymar was somehow underappreciated during his time as well. I mean, you look back at that decade of Spanish football when you had Zidane playing Figo, and then it slowly transitioned into Iniesta and Xavi. Aymar sometimes just gets strangely overlooked, whereas I think people that play football understand how important he was to a football team, which is why the likes of Lionel Messi and Diego Maradona rate him so highly. Because I know there's like this modern obsession with statistics, you know, like, oh, Kevin De Bruyne has got 25 assists, and he got 8. And it's like, yeah, but he was the attacking fulcrum of that side. Everything that they did went through him. He might not have been the one that was the final pass, but he created the opportunity that allowed the final pass or that goal all the time. And in terms of players that I enjoy watching in that ilk, I suppose those probably, those sort of like diminutive Argentinian playmakers, I think everyone has a sort of affinity for them. I mean, like everyone would pay to see Messi or Maradona or Aymar or Riquelme. But yeah, I think Aymar was probably like symbolic of Valencia at that time. Like he was just, people would pay to see him, wouldn't they? I mean, like I think Gary mentioned that the team was, that midfield was built for him. Like Albelda and Baraka were specifically put in there to break down attacks and give him a platform to go forward. So it almost felt like he was always the star of the show. If you were going to pay to watch Valencia, you were paying to watch Aymar.
That's a great comment. And the other question I was going to ask you as well is, you know, Gary mentioned there about players fitting at certain clubs, and you know, it's, you know, certain clubs, certain situations, and I guess you've kind of alluded to it a little bit there with regards to who they play with, but it just seems that some players and clubs just fit together like they were always meant to be together, and then from that comes this, like, you know, this almost everlasting bond of, you know, we've mentioned it with Kempes and Valencia, we've got it with Aymar and Valencia. So I suppose it's a little bit of a two-part question, I guess. You know, is it that Valencia are one of those clubs that once players go to, you know, they form this relationship because of the type of club Valencia is? Or is it based around, you know, like we've said, playing style, the players that they're with, the manager who's there? It just seems to be that momentary perfect storm where they can play their perfect game as well.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a bit of both. I mean, obviously the team was set up to allow Aymar to succeed. But sometimes I wonder whether, like, Aymar obviously went and thrived at Valencia. And as we've already established, we're, you know, in Spain, it's Real Madrid and Barcelona that are the two behemoths. And you think, like, it's probably a lot more difficult to go to a Real Madrid or a Barcelona if you're a very good player and establish yourself as one of those top icons because they just have so many. Whereas Valencia, maybe being that one step down, when Aymar went there, I mean, they were looking for someone that was a magician. And Aymar was looking for a team that would, you know, absolutely idolize him. So I think it was the perfect storm in that he fitted them and he was the player that they needed at the time. And I think that's probably why, because he never really recaptured those heights, did he, when he went to Zaragoza? And I think he went back to Argentina then, didn't he? And he even went back to River Plate. And even though River Plate was where he started, his homecoming wasn't particularly emphatic. Like, I think he played about half a dozen games and then retired because he was like, it just wasn't the same. So I think, yeah, Valencia was just the perfect scenario for him, but him also being the perfect scenario for them.
I'm just saying, by the way, correcting myself, that when I said Boca, I actually meant River. Forgive me for mixing those two clubs up. In fact, it's sorry for River, Passarella's request, not Boca. Stupid boy, Thacker, reprimanded.
I tell you what, Gary, I don't even want to mention to the River Plate fans what's coming in the South American Cities podcast either later on.
Oh, that'll be somewhere down the road. But yeah.
Oh, I tell you, the River
Plate. I'll share the play with you guys as well, though. I'm not going to have that one on.
The River Plate fans are going to be raging with you by the end of this.
It's a good job we've already done the magazine, sorry.
I know I wrote about Passarella in that magazine. Sorry, guys.
It's okay. Gary, don't worry. I get stuff wrong all the time. It's fine. But don't worry. Obviously, I guess coming to you, Steve, you know, the last sort of word on Aymar and more probably those sorts of players. You know, Josh made a great point about sort of the diminutive number 10s, if you like, or the diminutive playmakers that Argentina seem to have in abundance, or certainly, you know, Lionel Messi is just the latest one off what seems to be, certainly for as long as you and I have been watching football, just a production line. Like, you know, they mentioned Riquelme, you could probably put Ariel Ortega in there, you could put Aymar in there, Messi, Maradona. Yeah, you know, they just produce them time after time after time.
It's nuts when you're thinking names like Riquelme and Ortega are almost thrown in there as an afterthought. You know, and most of the nations would kill to have any of those as one of their most prominent stars. You know, they're just so metronomic in the production of these players. And production is not the right word because they play so naturally. You know, they are naturally gifted players. You don't produce a naturally gifted player. They are just, you know, quarried, born, whatever, you know, you know, they are just, you know, just dumped on earth, and here they are to entertain us, you know. And Aymar was one of those. Absolutely adored watching him. I watched a lot of Spanish football around about that time as well. You know, absolutely loved watching Benitez as Valencia. They didn't have a striker as such. You know, they played with this, you know, rotating midfield that would just score goals for fun. And Aymar was just the pinnacle of it all, and it, you know, saw them come to Anfield and absolutely tear us apart. You know, they beat us, I think, 1-0 or 2-0, and it should have been 4 or 5. You know, and they were one of those teams that came, beat us, and were applauded off the pitch for it, just because they were just such a joy to watch. And this is, you know, that era in which he played everything. And that's the thing about Valencia, is that they have these little sporadic eras where everything just clicks into place for them, and they are just a wonderful one. They have a wonderful 2, 3, 4 years, and then drop off. And there's, you know, this era with Aymar and Benitez on the touchline was just perfect.
I guess, you know, we've sort of started off, you know, looking at the past of Valencia and sort of working our way through in chronological order. You know, there's great players, like we say, that run throughout this magazine that the guys have written about. But for you, Josh, you got to, you got to transcribe, you got to write up an interview with the current club captain, Jose Gea. I mean, obviously, not to give too much away, but does it make for good reading? Is it, you know, is it an interesting, insightful interview?
Yeah, it is, because I was, when Omar said to me, oh, I've done this interview with Jose Gea, was it Gaia or Gea? I'm not sure how to pronounce it. I'm not strong on my Spanish. Nor
well, that's Gary. Gary will know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Hiya. I'll call him Jose. So with Jose here, I was wondering, because I was like, he's the club captain, he's going to be a spokesman for the club. I was like, is he going to be a bit of like a Harry Maguire who's just going to roll out a bunch of platitudes that don't mean anything after a game? And I was like, you know, it's going to be that interesting. But it turns out that he's a really like dedicated individual to Valencia, because he grew up in, pronunciation again, Pedreguer by Alicante. He grew up there, so he's like relatively homegrown, because Alicante is just down the coast from Valencia. So he came up to the academy, and he actually started off as a forward and was a bit of a free-scoring goal scorer. Because when I was reading through the interview, obviously some of the questions have been like, you know, who did you emulate as a child? Which fullback did you want to be? And I was expecting like Roberto Carlos or something like that. And he was like, oh no, I absolutely adore David Villa. David Villa was my hero. And it was just quite an sort of insightful glimpse into how a player can evolve over the years, in that he always saw himself as a centre-forward. But rather than being, I don't know, I'm a centre-forward myself, and I despise playing anywhere other than centre-forward. But he was clearly a young kid that was like, I'm going to make it as a professional footballer, so I will do whatever the coaches tell me to be able to get there. So when they said to him, you know, we think you're a better winger, he moved to the wing. When they were like, we think you're going to be an excellent fullback and probably make it professional, he moved to fullback. He just did whatever it took to make sure he was a professional footballer. And then it was interesting reading some of his thoughts, because Omar had asked him, you know, like, of all the current fullbacks in the world, like, which one, or current or recent, which one do you hold as like a model of efficacy? And again, I was expecting, like, considering his playing style, I thought, probably a Marcelo or like an Andy Robertson or someone like that. And he was like, no, Philipp Lahm, absolutely Philipp Lahm. He was like, the way he did everything, how he was so efficient on and off the ball. He was like, if anyone wants to be a fullback, you need to copy it off Philipp Lahm with football. Which for like a sort of cavalier Spanish fullback, I thought was quite an interesting answer, that he chose someone that I would consider just like the epitome of efficiency. But yeah, as a guy, he seems like a thoroughly likable human being, and someone who is also like Valencia through and through. Like, his entire ethos was, I'm going to get Valencia back to the top, and I don't care what it takes, which was quite admirable, actually.
Stephen, these, you know, the interviews that, you know, that we're lucky to get, you know, as part of these magazines, and I guess, you know, Gary is just another one. You know, we've had Jamie Carragher for Liverpool, who again, Liverpool through and through. We've had Vincent Kompany for Anderlecht. You know, yes, he's played for Manchester City, but again, he's Anderlecht through and through. And these interviews make for really insightful thought and opinion on the clubs that we're writing. You know, we're just, you know, guys in predominantly in England, obviously not you, Gary, living it up in Spain. But for the rest of us, you know, we're sort of, you know, we're tucked away here, sort of writing about a club, you know, that's on distant shores, but yet we also get access to these people who are actually living and breathing the club as, you know, that we're writing about. And it brings a real sort of depth, I guess, and credibility to the magazine.
I do. And I think that there tends to be a common theme that strikes throughout each one. And it's that kind of like, you know, very human element that, you know, it's very easy to see these players and these personalities as being, I don't know, detached from the realities that we live. What tends to be quite striking is the similarities and the common themes that run through them. It's the passions for the club. It's the love of football. You know, we've been lucky enough to do a couple of these interviews, and Zaniolo was another one that Omar did with Roma. You know, it's that innate love of football that just keeps you talking is the amazing thing. You know what, we've done interviews thinking we'll get 5 or 10 minutes out of a player and ended up there for like an hour. You know, with Anderlecht, you know, they had to kind of like drag Vincent Kompany away. You know, Jamie Carragher gave us about an hour and a quarter, you know, and could have talked on and on and on. You know, it's because it's that love of football. You know, you it's probably easy to think as well that if football's your career, you know, it's a bit of a busman's holiday. Maybe you don't want to talk about it. You just want to be quite functional with, you know, your answers and you're dealing with people who are asking you questions that you must have had a million times over. But it's nothing like that. You know, it's that joy of football, that love of football that just breaks through.
I mean, just coming back to Gary, just coming back to Jose Gaya, and I guess, you know, you live in Spain. We're not jealous. You live in Spain. And you know what's the perception? I mean, he's very well, relatively young to be, you know, a captain of a club of such stature and magnitude. You know, he's now more or less the number one starter for the position for the Spanish national side. You know, what's the opinion of the Spanish people as a collective? I guess the general opinion of him as a player.
I think this season has been a big season for him. As I mentioned earlier, certainly the emotionally the captain, the long time captain of Valencia was Dani Parejo, until the fire sale in the summer saw him. He was one of three or four players, first team players, who Valencia sold to stave off their mounting debts. I was the guy who stepped up. He's become the new head of the team, the new leader, and it's a role that he's sort of taken to so well. And as you mentioned, He plays a lot of time for Spain, not all the time, but he plays quite a few times for Spain. And he's playing for Spain in a team that, for a club team, when he's getting international honours, for a club team that's really going through a rough period. And that speaks volumes, I suppose, as well. Not only for ability, but also the sort of emotional strength to sort of keep going. Because as I said, they haven't done enough time, and you know, I'm sure unless anything happens, and it would be the biggest surprise in the world if come the summer somebody scoops him up and Valencia needs to sell more players. But if he stays another couple of years, he will be given the same sort of status as Dani Parejo has had for the last 3 or 4 years at the club.
It's, I mean, you know, we've already been chatting well over the hour already, but there's just a couple of things that I just want to sort of go through. Obviously, we've got article on Hector Cooper. We've got one on, you know, the Rafa Benitez era as well. For you, Josh, you know, like we said, you know, we've talked about our go-to players from whenever we think about clubs from certain eras, either when we were growing up. But who's the sort of the manager that you most associate with Valencia?
Oh, it'd be Rafa Benitez. Like, as you were saying that, I was like, do I need to think about this question? I was like, no.
No, don't think about them. It's fine.
That was very much the era that I can remember as an adolescent under Rafa Benitez. And I mean, you know, even as a United fan, it's not that easy to talk particularly politely about Rafa Benitez, but he was superb at Valencia. I mean, because he challenged that sort of power base that Real Madrid and Barcelona had. Was it two titles he won at Valencia or just the one? But I mean,
two titles, the UEFA Cup as well.
Yeah.
To disrupt the two biggest clubs like that in the way that he did, was just magnificent. So yeah, Rafa Benitez, without a shadow of a doubt.
It's a great segue, Josh. You're fitting in just fine on here, by the way, Josh. So coming to you, Stephen, obviously Benitez leaves Valencia and obviously comes to Liverpool. So, you know, yes, this is a Valencia magazine and, you know, we're here to talk about all things Valencia, but I suppose I agree with Josh as well in a way. You know, for me, Benitez is the first manager I think of when it comes to Valencia. But, you know, as a Liverpool fan, obviously the arrival of Benitez, once it becomes apparent that Benitez is the manager that's coming to Liverpool, what were your perceptions of him as a Liverpool fan at Valencia? And then what were your feelings once you knew he was going to be coming to your club?
Oh, delighted. You know, so many of us watched the Spanish game. You know, we'd played Valencia in the Champions League. You know, we'd seen his Valencia, you know, in our own backyard. We'd seen them, you know, they beat us both games. Narrow score lines, I think 1-0. I think one was 1-0 and one was 2-0. But they were proper footballing lessons. You know, they were fast. They were, you know, so hard. It was proper chasing shadow stuff. And they were wonderful to watch. I remember applauding them off at Anfield. I remember, I think I was on a Greek island somewhere when the second leg was played at the Messiah. Second leg, but the Messiah game. And I just remember kind of like being in awe of how well they played, and you know, I watched a lot of Spanish football at that time because it was just a fascinating era, because Deportivo were playing so well. They won the title in 2000. Atletico had marvellously self-destructed to the point of relegation. Sevilla had gone down, Betis had gone down. It was just an utterly action-packed era of Spanish football. You know, Barcelona under Van Gaal kind of like deteriorated. Then it was the Galacticos at Madrid, and there was Valencia who were sticking it to this heavily bankrolled Real Madrid, and you know they caught the imagination. And for anyone watching Spanish football at the time, you know they couldn't have not made a massive impression. So when we caught wind that he was coming to Anfield, we were just delighted. You know, the only thing that was disappointing is that he couldn't bring Aymar along. that was the one thing. We wanted Aymar, we wanted the satisfying name Ruben Baraja. But it's the way you've got to say it. That way, you know, it's Baraja. You know, it's just great. So, you know, yes, we have, it was utter delight to get him.
It's, I mean, Gary, the last, you know, not so much the last thing on managers, but I guess, you know, a couple of things with regards to Valencia, a club, one that is to do with managers, you know, and that is, they have had, you know, we started off with Stephen chatting about Di Stefano, you know, we talked about Benitez and what he did, Ranieri, Cooper, you know, they are a club who've had some big managers who have either made their name there or have arrived as big name managers, which again, I suppose, demonstrates the potential or the magnitude of the club.
Definitely, and you know, I was sort of contemplating when you asked Josh the question about the manager Moses, so I said, I'd have to say Cooper. I mean, Cooper took to Valencia to two successive European Cup stroke Champions League, whatever you want to call it these days, finals. Lost both times, lost 3-0, I think, to Real, and then lost on penalties to Bayern the year after. So, you know, as Josh mentioned, you know, this isn't Barcelona, this isn't Real Madrid. This is, you know, considered a second-tier team in Spain. Two successive European Cup finals. Now that takes some doing, and you know, I'd have to say, you know, and I mentioned earlier about Aymar fitting with Valencia, and Cooper never had as much success with his other clubs after he went to Inter after the second defeat, and he'd never had as much success, although actually Inter knocked Valencia out of the Champions League the following year with Inter in Milan as he did with Valencia. It was that was the peak time for him, very much as it was Aymar's peak time with Valencia. It's funny, both Argentine, and funny how these things sort of work out sometimes.
My other question actually, Gary, and you've kind of led me right into it, and I've saved this one for you because I know you won't like it, but I'm going to ask you anyway. But how do I'm fascinated with defeat and tragic loss in terms of football games, but how do clubs deal with successive European Cup final defeats?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I remember when we lost to Man United in Moscow and Terry slipped and Richard Bunny won that game. I cried. I mean, I'm not ashamed to say I went into the dining room, sat on the floor and cried. To do that twice and, you know, never be in a position to go back again, which Valencia haven't really been in a position to go back again. And certainly the way things are running at the moment, they're an awful long way from qualifying for the Champions League, let alone getting to the final. It must be soul destroying. You know, I've got my book coming out about Holland, the Dutch who lost two successive World Cup finals, and how that sort of created a psychological impact on the country that lasted for 10 years. And it must be, I don't know. I don't know how you would ever recover. And in fact, Valencia didn't recover from that in any real sense to get back to where they were before. It must be self-destroying. Especially on the second one, with loss on penalties as well.
And that's what, to be fair, that's exactly why I saved that question for you, Gary. Obviously, like you say, defeat. I know this has nothing to do with football, and I'm really sorry, but people of a certain age will relate to this. I always think of Jimmy White and how you recover from losing six successive snooker world championship finals. I don't know. I don't know how people do it.
Before you mention that, Athletic Club, which are often termed as Athletic Bilbao, but don't ever call them back in Bilbao because you'll get throttled, lost two Copa del Rey finals in a fortnight this season because of one delayed. And actually, they lost their last six Copa del Rey finals they played in.
It really is something that the psychology behind it is something that absolutely fascinates me. Devastation is a glib word to use. I appreciate that, but in footballing terms and in the terms of football matches, it's, you know, I just wonder how clubs, and like you say, some clubs never recover.
It is emotional. I mean, devastating, emotionally devastating. I mean, I think isn't stretching too far. You're a fan who sort of, you waited for that chance of glory and you have two on the bounce in successive years and never got even close again afterwards. I mean, you must think, you have this sort of lifetime thing. I'm fortunate to, in my lifetime, see my team win the Champions League and my country win the World Cup. All my boxes are ticked. But, you know, there's fans of clubs who have come so close and never get back again. And it must be, it's difficult to comprehend.
I feel bad that I've ended this podcast on such a low for Valencia fans. However, it's okay because...
it is okay because the amazing thing is that for them to lose those two Champions League finals, then see Hector Cooper leave for Milan, for Internazionale, lose Mendieta to Lazio, and then go and do what they did under Benitez for the next 3 years.
True.
You know, two La Liga titles and a UEFA Cup is absolutely startling, really. You know, for those type of blows should, you know, It should floor a club for like half a decade at least.
Yeah, you're right. You are absolutely right. And like I say, the powers of recovery astound me in sporting endeavours. I guess to finish on a high then, like we say, you know, the magazine is out May 3rd. You know, we've touched on a couple of the articles. You know, like I say, there's some we've not even mentioned. Obviously, there's Canizares, the goalkeeper. There are so many characters, you know, we've not looked at. David Silva, Mata, that we have articles about as well. You know, and like I said, you know, these are £10, but they are becoming absolute collector's items. And like I say, you know, it will sell out. People have been campaigning on the streets for a re-release of the Argentina magazine. And here it is. I doubt it'll be re-released again. If people miss it for a second time, well, shame on them, is what I say. But hopefully this is fair warning to be ready to order them both. But before we go, guys, your sort of standout Valencia memory. It can be a goal, it can be a game, it can be a player, it can be a moment, or, you know, whatever it is you want to pick. I'll give you free rein, Josh, first of all. You can have a pick of the entire back catalogue of Valencia, if you like, before the other two guys have their say.
I think I would go for, and I think I wrote about this for the website last year, Claudio Lopez's volley against PSV, where... I can't remember. It might have been Carboni, the left back, just dinked this ball forward from the halfway line. And it dropped over his shoulder and he just volleyed it top bins. And that's probably the moment I most associate Valencia with. Also because Claudio Lopez, I know I picked Mendieta earlier, but I'm going to change my mind. Claudio Lopez is a very Valencia player.
Okay, that's all right. You're allowed to change your mind. Don't worry. I'm happy with that. Stephen, I'll come to you next.
Hardwired, you know, that's the thing. It's always what you're hardwired by for me. And, you know, that's that game on Sports Night against West Brom, which, you know, short a couple of years before winning the Cup Winners' Cup against Arsenal. And it's because they did these against English clubs that made them so omnipresent in, you know, in my living room. And these are what set the scene for Valencia for me.
Excellent, great choice. Fully agree with that one. Gary, for you?
First of all, I mean, I echo Josh's comment about that Lopez goal, because that was some perishing volley, Ecky thumb bladder. And also, as I said, I was at the Baggies Ground when Valencia played there, but I'm going to go, when I research a player, I tend to spend, you know, hours watching YouTube goals, and there's this famous goal that Aymar scored against Tenerife. I think it was 0-1-0-2, and they were under pressure from Real Madrid and struggling. There was the common sort of wisdom that Real Madrid are going to rein them in and they're going to fall and stumble. And he scored this wonderful goal in Tenerife, and that's a 1-0 win. And there's a wonderful celebration. He takes his shirt off and runs around the stadium to the away fans, the Valencia fans, and it's the goal that is celebrated on the Valencia website. And they talk about Aymar and his success. It's the goal they're mentioning. It's a good goal. It's not as brilliant a goal as the Lopez goal that I just mentioned, but the emotional release of the goal is something to behold. So I'll go with that.
Excellent. And that's a far better way, I think, to finish this particular podcast. Like we say, it's available from the 3rd of May. It's 13 articles. It includes an interview with, like we say, club captain Jose Gaya. It's photographs, it's artwork, it's the smell, it's the complete package. And it comes with the opportunity to purchase the mythical, and it does exist, Argentina magazine as well. Guys,
the Umpa Lumpas have been very, very busy this year.
They have been busy over the Easter holiday. It's been brilliant. Wonderful, wonderful episode. Wonderful magazine to come. Thank you very much for joining us. Josh, have you enjoyed it?
Oh, thoroughly. Every bit of excitement I had in anticipation worth it. It was exceeded. Right. That was great. Thank you for having me on, guys.
Pleasure. And like I say, anytime. It always astounds me that people thank us for coming on when really we're the grateful ones. Stephen? Looking forward to the magazine coming out, because obviously we sort of write our own individual articles, but I'm always really nosy and more interested in what everyone else has done. I always wait for this list to come through about what everybody else has done.
Yeah, because I say you work your way down the list, and then you're just like, that makes sense. Should have seen that one coming. Oh, they've written about this one, have they? And it completely makes sense. And then you usually see at least two or three thinking, we should have thought of that one. Yeah, glad I wrote mine, but I wish I'd thought of that one.
I guess, Gary, I suppose we're probably getting to a stage now where you could almost send the article titles and we could play a game where we match the article title with the writer and just see how well we know these football teams writing staff.
Yeah. Oh, we'll have to do that for the next one.
Yeah, we'll do it anonymous. Oh, that was such a good idea.
Yeah,
we'll do it anonymously. We'll just ask them out to send us the titles and nothing else.
Yeah, the titles and the names, and then we've got to match.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, though. I mean, see what Stevie says there. I mean, my own article is the one I never read. I know what's in there. But, you know, you think you said, that one. Oh, yeah, you know. I mean, there's a couple in there, like the Canizares one, I think he's going to be really interesting to read as well. But, you know, just to say, great to have Josh on board. And you've got to come on next time as well, buddy. Looking forward to it. Once you make your debut now, the next one's a piece of cake, buddy.
That's it, yeah. I'm more than happy to come back.
And once we do the Man United magazine, you can just take Stephen's place. So
yeah, I'll sit that one out.
Just sub me in.
You can talk about the 1973-74 relegation piece, and I'll just enjoy listening to it.
Like I said, guys, it's been brilliant. The last final warning to everyone who's listening, 3rd of May, set your alarm. Obviously, some people check what time, and one guy wanted to get up at midnight last time for the Andlet one to make sure they didn't miss it. It doesn't need to be quite that severe, but just make sure you're ordering it 3rd, 4th of May before you lose the opportunity. Guys, final time, thank you very much. And all that's left for me to say is thank you for listening. And please join us again next time on the Lob Podcast with These Football Times. Thank you and goodbye.
Many thanks for joining us today on the Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.